Morning, folks. Welcome to a session about Team Foundation Service. Sorry for the little delay, but let's get started. My name is Dimitri Lylan, and I work for Microsoft. I'm a product manager, and I work on the Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server and Service teams. And today, we're going to talk about what is Team Foundation Service and how you guys can take advantage of it. So a little bit about me before we get started. I've been doing software development for over a decade, you know, 14, 15 years now. I really love what I do. I love building software. Even when I spend my whole workday in PowerPoint and Excel and Outlook, I try to write some code at night. I'm a big gamer. I love the PC. I love playing games. Any Star Wars Old Republic fans here? There you go, at least one. There's always at least one more in the room. So that's been sucking away my free time. And if anybody wants to contact me, if you have questions or anything, you can have my email up there. You have me on Twitter. I'm pretty responsive, so do let me know. I'll be here after the session as well. So today is all about Team Foundation Service. So I want to set the expectation off the bat. If you guys are using it and you love it, I don't know why you're here. That's the reality, right? If you're not sure what it is or if you haven't spent a lot of time with it, perfect session for you. We're going to go through it from the very beginning, everything from why should you use it, how do you start, what capabilities are there, what server versus service. So we'll go through the whole gamut. So I want to make sure everybody's in the right session. Lots of great other sessions happening today. The agenda for the day will be like this. We're going to start with how do you get started. We're going to go through some of the agile planning, team collaboration capabilities of it. We're going to talk about the version control capabilities. And we're going to end with the build capabilities, deploy to Azure, and testing. Because once you've built something, you probably want to test it. So we're going to go through the full gamut of capabilities. Before I go into service, I want to spend like 1 minute on Team Foundation Server just to set the baseline and to put the service into context because somebody might not have that understanding here. Team Foundation Server as a product has existed for a very long time. You know, we've had this product be in the center of the universe in team collaboration, the ability to manage source code and work items and all of these team activities right in the center of all of our other products that we make, Visual Studio being kind of the biggest customer there. And Team Foundation Service is merely Team Foundation Server put into the cloud. So don't think of Team Foundation Server as anything different. There certainly are some capability differences, there's certain configuration differences. You gain and you lose something in both cases, but at the heart of it, this kind of slide you've probably seen before if you've been at Microsoft Sessions, it's all about Team Foundation Server. It's just finally in the cloud, taking away all that headache of managing and configuring it, and comes at some cost as well. People have three choices today to host Team Foundation Server. So you buy the box product, and you're like, okay, what do I do with it? I want to install it for my team. You can go ahead to your data center, you know, your company, on your laptop, whatever it is, you can install this box product, right? So that's the first orange box over there. Then we have partners. If anybody, let's say, wants to not host it themselves, but wants full capability to still modify it, access it, you can use one of our partners. There's a link over there. It takes you to a Microsoft page with a list of partners that we work with to host Team Foundation Server in the cloud, right? So that's kind of the difference. There's Team Foundation Server on premises, Team Foundation Server hosted by a partner in the cloud, and then the final green box is our newest product, Team Foundation Service in the cloud, where we take care of everything for you. You have no access to the operating system. It's software as a service. And that's where we're going to spend time today. So why service? You know, why go that route when you have all these other options? Really, the cost can't be beat. If you're talking about 1 to 5 users, it's free. That's our commitment. Microsoft said that, you know, if you're one person, 2, 3, 4, 5, go ahead, enjoy. If you have MSDN, we've also said that we're going to give MSDN subscriber benefits. So if you have a team of developers and they're all using, you know, software licensing through MSDN, great, you should be covered as well. And we have a whole plan to release more information about pricing. Some folks might want to pay for it out of their pocket. This is going to be much more revealed later, just not at this session. The other big advantage of Team Foundation Service is that by default it's in the cloud. By default it's accessible. So you don't have to worry that, oh, we have Team Foundation servers behind the firewall. Now we need to get somebody to access it from home, or we need somebody to go ahead and get like a partner into our source control or work items. So by default, it's in the cloud. That's a big advantage. You don't have to manage anything. We patch it for you. We service it. We add new features for you. That's a really big thing, right? So you have features being delivered every sprint. Every time they do a good sprint at Microsoft and they feel the tests are going good, they deploy it to the service. So service gets features way before server. Server eventually rolls the features up. That's why we do those updates, right? We do major releases, like Visual Studio 2013, as we announced, is coming out. That's a big roll-up of features. Then there'll be updates as well. But this thing, the service, just getting updates nonstop. Also, you get Windows Azure integration. So if you're building something on Windows Azure and you want to do continuous deployment, you want to have an integration between source control and your Azure deployment environment, we give you that out of the box. That's only available in the service today. All right, so those are just some of the advantages. This is the way that I kind of look at the different kind of categories of people that might be using service or might want to use service. You might have a small team. If it's five or less, that's perfect, right? It's free. If it's more and you guys are MSDN, that's great. I've seen enterprises, usually at a team level, decide that maybe a particular team doesn't want to host anymore in their IT infrastructure, or they want to work more with partners in the cloud, or they love their IT, but they just don't get access at home to source control and things they need to sort of stay productive. That's another great capability. Also, if you've never tried Team Foundation Server, this is your way to try it, right? No cost, just go in there, set it up, you're ready to go. And then there's like the My Project. You know, this is Dimitri, the green box. I love to build stuff and I need source control. And I used to pay for it at a partner. I no longer have to because I don't know if you guys noticed, I'm less than five people, so it's free. All right, well, enough slides. I want to jump into some demos. Let's talk about, once you see it, give me a second here. Let's duplicate our screen. There we go. All right, so once you go to tfs.visualstudio.com, you're going to be at this web page. The reason why I'm actually doing a demo of a web page is because this is how you get started. If you haven't, I want to show you just how easy it is. If you have a Live ID, what we're calling now Microsoft account, that's the new fancy name, all you have to do is go here, literally click sign up for free. And you're going to choose a URL. Once you choose that URL, that will be the URL for your Team Foundation service. Now, let's do this real quick. These URLs are unique. And by default, again, I want to stress this, Team Foundation service is in the cloud. There's no way to put it behind a firewall. So it's going to be accessible. Microsoft just does that. We're doing our best to secure it, right? We haven't had any issues yet. The world isn't perfect, but we certainly invest a lot of money to make sure this is secure. I would argue better than most organizations can because of our resources. So once you pick a URL, if that URL isn't taken, you hit the create button. If you're logged in already with your Live ID, you got your account. It's that simple. I'm not going to hit the create button because my Live ID already has an account. Every Live ID can have one account, but then that Live ID can be assigned to other people's accounts and you can work with them, but you can't create another account. So I just won't bother with that. Also, if you're just getting started, I don't want to underestimate the little learn button here and point out a couple of things real quick. So when you click learn, you're going to be able to learn about all the features, all the capabilities, much deeper than I'm going to have time to go in to discuss today. But a few things to note. Team Foundation service doesn't care what tool you use per se, right? There's a web interface. We're going to do pretty much 99% of our demo today through the web interface. It doesn't care that you're a Visual Studio developer, an Eclipse developer, Xcode developer, but we're making it easier and easier to be an Eclipse or Xcode developer, to use Git, to do all these things that typically are in Microsoft and work with Team Foundation service. So the way you should look at it is you have Team Foundation service in the cloud. That's where you get your source, your work items, your builds, and now you have your tools. That's something different, and we have the compatibility to work across the board. So if you're not a Visual Studio developer, if that's not your tool day to day, don't think you're excluded from all of this. There's a lot of capability there. All right. All right, so that's how easy it is to get started. Again, tfs.visualstudio.com, that's the domain where you go to get started. Next, we're going to jump into a demo about, all right, I've created an account. What do I do next? What is the usual steps that I should take to learn how to use this tool properly? What capabilities are there? And we're going to try to sort of play along as a team. You know, if a team really was ready to use this tool, how would they do it? What would they do? They'd probably set up their team, set up some sprints. I'm going to make some assumptions, right? I can't cover every use case, but let's say they're an agile team. They have a couple of people in their team. They want to start collaborating together. They've got the account set up. How do they do that? Let's take a look. So back in the web browser, we're going to spend most of our time. I'm going to sign in. And this will take me to a page that I want to point out. I own one account for this live ID. If you forget your URL and you go to tfs.visualstudio.com, it's going to show you the one account that you're associated with as the master, right? This is what you own. This is what you created. It won't show you things you have access to. So even though we're not going to use that URL, that's my personal stash. That's where I keep my source code. But I wanted to point out, because when I first started using the service, I'll admit I forgot my URL a couple of times. I was like lylinsomething.visualstudio.com. I couldn't remember. So that's nice to kind of be aware of. But now that we're logged in the web browser as a live ID, I'm going to type in the other address, and we'll get going. Let's start here. So this is where you land when you come into the service. I'm going to zoom into kind of the more important parts of this page. When you create an account, you just have an account. You don't have any teams yet. And you, as one account, can have many project teams. And each team can have its own members, can have its own source code, work items. You know, they can work together out of one, you can say server, right? But it's just in the cloud. It's a virtual idea. And you can have multiple teams. So here, in my preparations, I've created all sorts of teams in my project. Whatever I recently accessed, whichever teams are going to be listed when you log in. But you also get a create button, so you can create a new team. And we're going to actually go for that experience together. So I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to click this button right here. You have two options. You can create a new team or a new team plus Git. That means if you just create a new team, it uses Visual Studio Source Control. If you do plus Git, it uses Git Source Control. We have a great session in Git at TechEd. I'm not sure if it was before today or not. I'll have it towards the end as a session number. So if you want to learn about the Git capabilities, you should see Martin Woodward's session. But today we're going to focus on the Visual Studio style source control. So I'm going to hit the new button here. Let's call this the actual session. And I have some options. I can choose from templates such as, here, I'll zoom in for you guys, such as the Scrum, Agile, or CMMI. For the purposes of today, I'm going to use the Scrum template, but those are all available. And if you change your mind about source control, you can actually select Git down here, but I'm not going to do that. So I've got my session project name. One disclaimer, you can't change this name, so make sure it's what you want, or you're going to have to delete your project and recreate it. So one little limitation. So I've got it here. I'm going to hit the Create button. And literally in a few seconds, I'm going to have my project team. This means that now I have a default workspace, a home page for my team, and that's where everything's going to start. So we're going to give it a second. And the reason why I do like to show this is just to give you guys an idea of just how fast it is. See, it's done. It really doesn't take much to get started. Down here, there's a Navigate to Project button. This lets you jump right into the team. If you didn't click that, you would have to click next time you log in, this Browse All button. Your team won't be listed here by default. You know, you have to at least go in there one time. So I'm going to go ahead and click the Navigate to Project. And this is my team project homepage. The only problem when you do a demo like this to an audience is this isn't very interesting. This isn't showing you all the capabilities. So for a few seconds, I'm going to switch to a homepage of a team that I've built out just to give you a sense of what this could look like for your team once you guys get going. So the famous Tailspin toys. Let's increase the size. All right, so here it is. This is what a more mature project homepage can look like. The advantage here is that you have the ability to customize what it looks like. We're not going to force you to have anything on there. If you don't want to, you don't have to. The only thing you will see, because this is an agile project, is Sprint 1 and Burndown. That's going to be there. But anything under team favorites, that's up to you to decide. And this could be very useful, right? You could monitor important builds right from the homepage. You can see the status. I've had a bunch of build failures, as you can see, those red lines, now a green one, so the team can be confident the last build succeeded, finally, Dimitri fixes bugs. You can see how many bugs are open. You can see the product backlog, what's happening there. You can see if there's any feedback waiting from users to be received. You can even jump to source control on a particular project and see how many changes happened to their project recently. And that's the box over here. Right, so you've got a lot of capability here. You also, on the right-hand side, see your project team. This is not everybody, right? This won't continuously just keep expanding. But if you go under Manage All Members, you can go ahead and manage that project team. So I have a bunch of folks here. This is my team. Those are their live IDs that they're using to log into the system. That's how they get access. There's nothing more to it. You know, another big advantage, you're not waiting for your organization to sort of keep up with your agile spirit and all the vendors you work with. You know, with great power comes great responsibility at the same time. If you add a live ID there, they get access. It's just that simple. There's no like, are you really sure, sure? So be very sure when you click that add button that you're adding people you want to have access. And if you click add user, that's the dialog that lets you enter anything, let's say at Microsoft.com. So if there was a live ID called anything at Microsoft, that person, when I would save changes, would have access to the system. And of course, if you've been working with people in other team projects, as I have, as you start typing, their name starts coming up, so it lets you find folks in your system, but any live ID works. And that's our project team. Another thing that we have new, this was announced literally on Monday, is the idea of team rooms. We're going to spend some time in there. I'm not going to click on the button now. But this gives you an idea of what it can look like. You have your Tailspin Toy team. You can click on there and interact with folks. You can see how many people are currently in the room. It thinks there are four people in the room for this demo. But I'm going to jump back to our project. It can do that really easily from up here, the actual session. So here we are. This is the default project, right? We have nothing yet on here. First, I'm going to add some team members because this project needs some folks to work with me. I'm going to go ahead and add user. And I'm going to add Brian, Julia, Adam. Once I hit save changes, hit close, it refreshes. Now I have a project team. So in this kind of role play scenario, I've set up my team project, I've got my account, everything's great, I've got live IDs from people who I want access, I gave them access, I gave them the URL, you know, of the account. The URL is up here always, of course, right? In my case, it's tfsdemotech@visualstudio.com. You send them that URL, they're good to go. Once you have your team set up, if you're an agile team, you're gonna try to manage your sprints. And we make it very easy. You can go ahead and configure, schedule, and iterations. On the homepage, the button's in the bottom right here. We're going to click that. And you can see that I have a bunch of sprints set up by default, fully customizable. You can go ahead and delete all those, rename them, whatever you want to do. For our purposes, we're just going to set some dates. We want to make sure that as we play along here, we have some dates that we're working against. So I'm going to say set date. And I'm going to say that Monday until next Friday is sprint one. And then for sprint two, I'm just going to set up two sprints. I'm going to click the dropdown, and the system is smart enough to already put the Monday after the last Friday. So I'm going to select that, and it's smart enough to put 2 weeks later, right? So it knows your first sprint, the sprint right before sprint two, sprint one was 2 weeks. It configures it for you. So now we have our sprints configured. Now that we have that going, I'm going to go ahead and enter the team room, show you guys what that looks like, and we'll do some configuration as well. So I have a lot of team rooms, right? This is the list that goes on and on for me because I've been playing with this for quite a bit of time. So anything that you have access, any room is there for you, and this is your collaboration space. Now, in the team room currently, there's one person. I'm going to collapse this to make it easier. Hello, TechEd. So it's a big chat room. It's a durable chat room. It's where you can interact with people. You can also see activity, fully configurable. I'll show you that in a second. It's really like the heart of the system now for collaboration. We'll simulate one more person joining us. Just to, you know, since I'm using one computer, I need two web browsers. So I wouldn't call this an app, but I've built a very kind of dumb web browser embedded in a Windows 8 app just so it has its own session here. And here we are. So now I've got two people. I can dog that side by side. And I can say, hello, Dimitri, good morning. So now there's two people in the room. These people are chatting with each other. And that alone is kind of fun, but not as useful, I think, as if you're actually seeing activity as well with the chat. So I'm going to configure some events. This way, as we keep going through the session, we'll see the room populated with information. And Brian's going to hang out in our room, and we'll come back to him and see what activity has been happening. So I'm going to click the Manage button, and let's talk about what's available to you. The idea of Team Rooms is, I would say, twofold. It's a place to talk, and it's a place to see activity. But activity can be overwhelming. We don't want to show you guys everything. You might have a lot of team projects, a lot of builds, a lot of stuff going on. So we make it configurable. We can say, I want certain code changes to be visible here, work item updates, code reviews, build completions. You can imagine how this is going to grow into the future, but today those are our options. So we're going to go ahead and configure at least some of the basics. We don't have a build yet, so there's no build definition in this team. But I do have the ability to set these checkboxes. That means anybody who's a member of this room that has a code review that's created, anybody who's a member of this room that has a work item update, et cetera, for code changes as well. So we're going to save that. And now the team room has been configured. By default, that's not configured. So if you just create a team project, you're not going to see events in there. And we're done with that. Let's go back to our actual session. So now that we've created a team room configuration that we wanted, we've got everything kind of going, we've got to start creating work. One of the biggest capabilities here is to manage your work assigned. And work in Agile form starts with stories. It goes down to tasks. We've announced this idea of features, something even higher up. We're not going to talk about features much today. It's just a little bit overwhelming. I'll give you guys a quick demo. But we'll actually start creating our tasks. We'll create our stories and see how that affects the system. So I'm going to go ahead and click on the Work Hub. So we were at home, now we're at work. And I need to start creating. So now, as you see, as I'm typing, this is happening in real time. The item, as soon as I hit Enter, is actually created in the system. It's all using Ajax. It's really nice. It works with any modern browser. So you can come in here, Firefox, Chrome. The system isn't dependent on IE. That's just all I'm using. And I've gone ahead and created a couple of stories. We've also added color coding a while back. So stories are now blue. And you'll see how, as more and more items mix into the system, the color coding actually is a big help. You can kind of visually see where things are better. And I want to populate a bunch of things in here. So we'll do some fake items. Let's call this one fake items. There you go. So now we've gone ahead and created a bunch of stories. And these stories are the beginning. What are we trying to accomplish as a team? Right? These bunch of things is, you know, five items that I've created. That's what we're trying to accomplish. And now we need to figure out, well, do we actually work on these items? It's nice that somebody went in and typed in a bunch of items in a backlog. Who's going to work on them? So let's figure all that out together and show you how the web interface makes it easy. One thing on here is called board. So I want to take a step back because you can easily be lost in the system if, you know, a guy like me who knows it already is clicking too fast. When I clicked on work, I was able to come here and create items, right? So this was the default. I went from home to work to backlog. But there's a board button there. If I click on the board button, that's where the view changes. I'll zoom it out just a little bit here, like that. And these are cards. And this is the Kanban board. Kanban board was something we recently added. It gives you the ability to manage your stories in a workflow fashion. So most organizations have some way to manage the process of deciding whether something gets worked on. Now, you might that for you, that might be one person, right? If it's just you working on it, that's not very useful. But if you do have a process, we've created a way for you to flow the work through that process in a visual way, in a way that the whole team can participate and see what's going on. So I'm going to go ahead and actually customize this process to meet my needs. By default, items go into this new Kanban state, approved, committed, or done are the other ones. I can use mouse or even a touch interface to drag items around. I've got a touch laptop here, so it's kind of fun. I get to move it around. I've seen one team, they have a giant display, and they move things around with touch as a team in a sprint meeting, so that's kind of fun. But mouse and keyboard works just fine, so I'm going to move a couple of items into approved. And that's maybe my process of my organization. But what we've added is the ability to customize Kanban. And let's say we need Bob's approval. Anybody here works in an organization where there's a guy named Bob and he approves everything you work on? Most of us at some point have that, right? There might be a step that's really necessary. Now, if this is, let's say, a financial company, you might do return on investment review. If this is some kind of security issue for your organization, you might do a security review. Can we do this work? Can the security team approve this work before it goes on to a state where work is actually being worked on? And these, what I would call process states, new, approved, they map to actual work item states. So while it's new, it's new. When Bob approves it, it's still new. But visually, at least, we know that Bob has it in his queue to work on. If Bob moves it to the approved state, the work item changes to approved, and that's when your team can start assigning tasks to it and start actual work on it. So we're going to save that. It's going to update for us right away. And we're going to move a couple of items around. So Bob has a queue, but he's approved two items, and we're going to start working on those. In fact, let's make those the nicer items. So there you go. It's very easy. And once you move it, that's it. It's saved. There's no like save button to press. And now that we've done that, we can go back to our backlog. And we can see that the state has been changed to approved for two items. And now those two items need to go into a sprint so people can start working on it. That's also very easy. You can, as one approach, you can just drag it to sprint one. That's your current sprint. According to the clock that we set, this is where we are right now in time. So the current sprint is now being assigned to work items, literally by dragging them in. And we're ready to start working on these items. I'm going to click on sprint one and show you how the view changes. And this is where it could get a little bit confusing, but we'll clarify that right away. There's still a board button up here. It's a different kind of board. Because you move from this concept of we're figuring out if we're going to do work to let's do work. These are stories in our sprint we're going to work on. And we need to assign tasks, but we also need to make sure that people move them through the states, you know, of, hey, I've got some work, I'm working on it, I'm done with the work, et cetera. So we'll go through that. But first, we're going to create some tasks for each one of these items. Update website new logo might mean you have to create the logo, update some CSS, et cetera. So let's create some work. I'm going to say plus, click on that. The wonders of the internet sometimes mean we're circling there. All right, so create new logo. And maybe Brian, one of our Brians. See, this isn't good. I've actually masked. You can rename people. Yeah, so a person can go in and say, I want to be called Brian or Brian as well. Now we have two Brians who are identical. In the real world, you might want to avoid that. That can get very confusing. But let's say we know that the first Brian's the right guy. So I've assigned this work item to Brian. And I'm going to hit new. Update HTML, CSS with new logo. And let's say our web developer is Dimitri. So now we've gone ahead and taken, see, this is where the color coding I think is nice. It gives you a visual sense of the blue items are our stories. And we've got some, I guess, what color is this? For the color disabled a little bit. Orangish, whatever. You get the idea. So create new logo, update HTML, that's there. And they're assigned to somebody. And now we're going to create a couple of more items. Create backend service. I just want to make this feel a little bit more real, so we're going to create a bunch of items. Now I want to ask a question, because I've been guilty of this for a very long time. And I'm just curious, you know, I won't hold it against you or for you if you can raise your hand. How many folks have Team Foundation Server 2010, 2012, and only use Visual Studio? They never go into the web interface. Yeah, their hands going up. I'm one of those people. I used to be one of those people. It's very, very common. I would say, just to be very honest and frank, that I feel like the value really started with 2012. I just feel it. I think when 2012 came around, this interface became beautiful, it became usable. Look how quickly, I mean, we went through this. This could be on premises for you guys. It doesn't have to be in a cloud. This web interface is available. The advantage here is that I didn't do anything with my IT department to set it up. right? That's the only advantage. And now we have this beautiful interface to go in, manage your work. You can still do everything in Visual Studio. You can create a new account in Team Foundation Service, connect to Visual Studio, and forget the web interface completely. That's fine if you want to do it that way. I think there's value here, so we'll keep going for the demos and show you the advantages. And I almost feel like when I do this demo that I'm also just advocating for web access to people and saying, hey, this thing is pretty cool, give it a shot in your organization. I really can't imagine using Visual Studio for a lot of this work assignment anymore. This is just too nice. So we're going to click on board and show you the next kind of board that we have. This board thinks about work in a different way. So Kanban says you have your stories and they're moving through a workflow. A couple of items got approved. We got tasks assigned to those items. Now we need to move those items through the states of, okay, we have to do it. We have to start the work. We have to be completed with the work at some point, right? Hopefully within the sprint. And you might imagine that this board can get very busy. Let's say you have six people and each person has three stories, you know, the usual too much work, too little time scenario. So you can have a lot of things on here, but it's very easy to just go through it visually. And a lot of teams use stickies on a board for this kind of work management. I've done that a few times, and I've had times where I couldn't come into the office, and I couldn't remember what I had assigned to me because I didn't update, you know, TFS. You don't want to get in that state. You don't want to get disconnected from the physical wall in the back of the office. This could be your wall. And if you guys can afford a big display, that's just a lot of fun. I'm just guilty of saying. So on my touch machine here, again, I could go ahead and say, all right, so the first two, well, these two items are mine. I'm actually working on them. I've moved them into the state. Now, the states here are to do and in progress. They map directly to the states of the work item. And if I click on the work item, I can see that the state has been updated to in progress just by doing a drag and drop operation. If I push it back to done, it'll be done. If I push it to back into to do, it's going to be in to do state. So now that I've assigned a bunch of work, one thing I want to show you is you don't have to view this from the perspective of things you know, the stories and the things you have to do. You can also view it from the perspective of people. And this is a very nice view because it lets you see, hey, you have a bunch of stuff that you didn't assign to anybody. That's a really quick way to filter that data. And then you can see how many work items are on people's plates, and you might see somebody has a lot of work and is overloaded, and that could be a good sign to say, let's move some things around to different people. So I'm going to go ahead and assign these items here. I'm just going to drag them into the queue because we don't want to have anything unassigned. And again, we've taken out the need to open the item, click the drop down, find the person's name. We just drag them to the person's name, and we're done. The work item's been updated. So we can go ahead and say, all right, this looks good. Let's talk about capacity. There's a button up here called capacity. So we're literally, you know, going from backlog to board, now to capacity in the header here. And this is all about sprint one, right? That's the context. That's sort of your purview. In sprint one, capacity says how many units does each person have a day within the sprint to work. And it gives you some charts later to give you a visualization of sort of how much work is on somebody's plate. Are they overloaded, underloaded, et cetera? And each sprint, you can update that because the reality is people's capacity changes. And let's assign some capacity to folks. Apparently, Dimitri doesn't sleep, so we'll give him 22 hours. We'll give Brian 4. He's a very busy guy. Adam and Julia have 6. And we're going to click the Save button. Now, back on this board. So back on this board, we've, you know, assigned some capacity, so later on we'll see how that affects people. But we want to create a couple of more items. You can do that right from this view as well. So I can click the plus anywhere and say, hey, I want to add some more items. So I've added a couple of more items. And if we go to the people view again, we'll see that those two items are unassigned because we just created them without any sort of assignment. And here's where I just want to show you guys the team room real quick. I think our team room is a little bit stuck. Let's restart that. Sorry, the internet here is spotty. Hey, internet is spotty everywhere. In my hotel, I couldn't even get anything to work. So this is the team room that the team room that we created. And we've enabled activity to be fed into this team room. So as we've been working, the team room has the activity in a timeline order. So you can see as we really created each item in the product backlog and et cetera. Imagine you were away for a couple of days, right, from your team, or imagine you just joined them. You can jump in here and take a look at what's been happening, actually. This is a common problem. That email from your friend, right, on the team. So what happened yesterday, the sprint meeting? You know, what work, when items got created, what got reassigned? You can open up and see a query, and you can say, hey, do we have friends visiting us? You can say who's got how much work, but it's much easier, much nicer to see a feed of activity where, all right, I know exactly what happened in which order. Something got moved off my plate to Brian. Brian took it and said it's completed. Then a build failed. And then that build failure got a bug, got assigned to somebody. Then they fixed it. And now I know that the build failed, build got fixed, work got reassigned for me. I'm good to go. And the way I know that each day is there's actually a timeline selector up here. And you can choose any day. I'll zoom in a little bit. Oops. There you go. So you can see any day what happened, and it's durable. Nobody can delete anything from your team room. Your team room is your activity feed. It's your chat room. Don't post anything stupid in there that you will regret. Career limiting moves are fully available in team room. You know, it's very powerful. So we've been good. We haven't done anything too stupid. We'll duck that back here. All right, so now we've got a bunch of work. Let's say those two items, we're not sure if we're even going to do them in sprint one. So let's keep them unassigned for now. Move on to the next. Another button that's in the interface, so we've been in this backlogs button. We went from home to work. From work, we were in backlog. And from backlog, we're going to go work items. Work items is a query interface. This is what you have in Visual Studio. So if you're in Visual Studio, you're probably creating queries, right? If that's your environment, you're probably very familiar with it. You can do that on the web as well. You can go in here, you can customize queries, you can save them to yourself. They'll appear in Visual Studio. It's fully synced up, right? And if you've already created some in Visual Studio, they'll appear here as well. And you can also have team favorite queries, everything that, again, a lot of folks that have been doing this for a long time, they're used to it, but they're used to it from Visual Studio, not from this side of the fence. And you can take and create a new query. So let's say I want to create a query just for myself. And click New. And I want to see where any work item whose state is committed. I can hit Run. If anything, you know, would appear, it'd appear here. Let's just say any just to show some data. So this is the same kind of query interface you're probably used to, where you're building a query up here, and you're getting your results down here, right? That's very common. I just wanted to show you that that exists here as well. And the cool thing is that we can create queries and then pin them to your homepage. That's how I was able to create queries before. So let's actually create something more useful. Let's say this. Let's do bugs whose state is not equals to closed. There should be nothing in here for now. That's fine. We're going to save it. I'm actually going to right-click and rename to say open bugs. If I click on results, I just see the results view. And I'm going to drag this into shared queries because I want my team to get access to this on their homepage, and if it's just mine, they won't be able to. So I've created something in my queries. I dragged it to shared queries, and then there's a little star here. You can add it to your favorites. Or you can say right-click, but the little drop-down, you can say add to my team favorites. Yeah, they know about that. See? Yeah, it doesn't actually break the system. It's just annoying. I've hit it one time before, and I'm like, is that going to happen during my demo? And they said maybe. It depends what you click on, right? But it actually completed, so even though we had a little error message there, Open Bugs is now in my favorites, and I'm going to go ahead and add it to my team favorites as well. And now they're in my team favorites. Oops. No, that's fine. So product backlog and bugs. Am I clicking the wrong button? Yes, I am. Add to team favorites. Sorry about that. All right. And let's say I only care about bugs. So now my favorite query list in Visual Studio in here will be Open Bugs. My team will be Open Bugs and Product Backlog. And if I click Home, we'll see that our page is starting to build out. Now we've got a bunch of stuff pinned to it. We can see what's going on. We can see who the people are, what activity is happening. We can come into the chat room and say, wow, that's a lot of work. And we got some interaction. Switch to my buddy here. We need more for you, actually. Thanks a lot, Brian. So there we go. We've got interaction between team members. Everybody can see it later on, even if there's some silly jokes in there. The other thing that I want to show you is this notion of managing work at a higher level. So I'm going to switch back to Tailspin Toys for a second, just because it's a little bit more mature. There's data there. And I'm going to go to work, and I'm going to click on backlog, features. And let's talk about features for a second. If you guys use Team Foundation Server or Service today, this is new to you since Monday. We announced the idea of features. For better or worse, that's what we called it. In Team Foundation Server, you'll actually be able to rename what it's called and actually be able to add more levels of hierarchy. So there's more customization if you do on-premises installation. But in the cloud, for now, this is what you get. You're going to get one more higher level of abstraction of your items called features. And you can then link stories to features. You can link tasks to stories, and you can build out a hierarchy of work. It's very useful. To give you a really good example of it, even though these features are pretty and they have the purple over there, the Visual Studio purple, as I like to call it, I'm going to go in the top right, and I'm going to say, I want to see feature mapping to stories. This is where it gets really interesting. You could have, let's say, a team where all your managers sit in that team. That's the project team. And that project team could be creating these features. They want to do something grand. They want to do a marketing campaign. And the marketing campaign actually means code changes to the website. It means updating the database. It means working with the graphics department. And they're all separate teams. Let's say you store your graphic assets in Team Foundation Service as well. So you have all these teams working, and they're creating stories to match their boss's vision of this marketing campaign. And now the managers can go in here and say, all right, it's been a day. I think it's enough time. What kind of stories have been created for the features that we envision? And they can take a look at it. Now, if they're really ambitious, or if they just like to come by the developer's desk and be like, hey, can you change something, right? They might want to see where the work is actually being assigned. So you can say tasks as well. And now you have a full tree of features, stories, and tasks. Very useful for organizing your work, and very useful to work across teams. Think of this as, you know, really at an organizational level. I think this is great. I'm not going to spend too much time on it again. It's new. It's very complicated to compare to other things we're showing, and I want to give you guys a complete demo today. So that's features. And if anybody wants to see more, just come by after the session. We can spend some time on it. All right, so now we've got some work assigned. We need to, at some point, get the source code, right? This is all nice and fancy. We're developers here. Or we're managers of developers, and those developers better write some code. So let's see how we interact with this new project, put some source code in there, and show you the source code capability, management capability in the cloud as well. So I'm going to open up Visual Studio. This is one of the few times I have to use it in our demos. And we're going to connect. Just make sure we're connected to the right team project. I'm going to uncheck everything except actual session. So now, as a Visual Studio developer, again, you don't have to be. You can use other systems. But let's say you do use Visual Studio. You have to map your source code somewhere to a workspace. Nothing is new or different here. We're going to create a folder. So I'm just going to go in here old-fashioned way. Actual session is what I'm going to call it. And I'm going to map this source control path down. I'm going to say get latest. So now we have a place to create our source code, and we're going to create a new project, a new web project, throw it into our source control, and go back to the web because I think, again, that's where it gets really interesting for us. The first thing it's doing is just pulling down the templates. I just told it to do that. I've actually coded against Team Foundation Service wall on an airplane. Check in, check out. I love that whole internet up at 30,000 feet thing. And it's worked quite well. And sometimes it did that, right? Where the internet hiccups and the world comes to an end. I need to get through this. It's a demo. I'm not going to dwell. Let that finish. We can open another instance of Visual Studio. So, I'm cheating. I'm sorry. I admit it. We have 29 minutes left. We have to get through this. So we're going to go ahead and create some source code. Let's make sure it's in the right folder. When I was preparing, I put it into the wrong workspace, and I was wondering where my source code went. That was kind of funny. So MVC application, nothing fancy here. And you can store anything, you know, in source control. I mean, there's nothing different than what Team Foundation Server is, so whatever projects you guys want, you can put them in. I'm just creating a web application because that gives me the capability to do a build and deploy demo a little bit later. So I've gone ahead and created a new project. Now I wonder if it actually finished here. Oh, look at that, it's still trying to cancel. How nice of it. Everybody here see the keynote on Monday, I hope? You think it's chaos behind the scenes or just perfect? Everybody's just sitting there drinking tea and like, should go fine. Nothing like this will ever happen. We've practiced 50 million times. Why would a KBM switch fail 5 seconds before our executive goes on stage? That's why you have two of everything, FYI, or three. I'm voting for three next year just in case. Yeah. All right, this thing was, it's probably this session. I'm just going to good old crash it down. We'll restart again. Yeah, I think I caused a deadlock on my machine here. So here it is. This session was created. So we have an MVC application. We're going to add it to source control. Add to solution to source control. Now it's in the pending state to be checked in. Right-click, check in. My first project. This isn't a Visual Studio demo today, so I'm not going to dwell on this UI, but I'm going to check this in. Once this project is checked in, what's really cool to show you is the web interface and what you can do with it as a project team. So we'll do a little side-by-side thing so I can see when it's done. And show you guys the code window. So one of the hubs we have is called Code. And if you click on code for the project that we're working on, the actual session, there's not going to be any code in here until all the check-ins are completed. So that should be in a second. Once the check-in is completed, we're going to see an Explorer view in here and be able to browse the source code. And I'll show you some cool features there. Yes, question.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to
wait
those?
Yeah. So the question is it possible?
I don't take any more time. I just felt to pause.
Yeah, so that's fine. So the question is, if we have work items and we're doing a check-in from Visual Studio, is it possible to associate it with the work item? Yes. It's just not a Visual Studio demo. In Visual Studio, you just associate an item with that check-in. You put a comment in, hit check-in. It would update it. The team room would update the status as well. So that's all built in. And I'll show you guys that if I have a chance later or come by. So now we've checked in the source code, and I can do a refresh. And now my solution, the first project, MVC application session, is in here. The cool thing about this being in a web is twofold. One, let's say you're on vacation, and you're like me. You still work a little bit. You know, when your wife isn't paying attention, you sneak in that laptop view. Like, I just don't want to deal with everything when I get back. I'm sorry. I feel guilty every time I do it. But you might want to do that from a machine that doesn't have Visual Studio. You might want to see what people are working on. So this gives you source control in a cloud, and it works with Git as well. So here, see, we're getting connection timeouts. I think our internet is just a little spotty. That's fine. So you can see the structure. You can see every file that's in there. You can see it from the perspective of contents, what's in source control, or history. You can say, how did it get here? So if I click on a particular, let's say, icon, I can see that icon was created by one change set. I can then click on the change set node here, and it's going to jump into change set view. What just happened is very simple. It went from Explorer to change set for me, and it entered the change set 50, which caused this file to be created, and it's giving you a preview of that image as well. I like this feature a lot. for images. If you have images in here and you want to preview what they look like, you can actually say contents, and you can actually see what the images look like in a web. Or if you want to look at source control, you can look at the source file. And to me, this is probably even cooler. Look at the color. It's actually colorized, so you have a pretty good sense of what this code looks like. It's not just a big mess. It's not a blank text file. So I think it's very useful to see it this way. And I'm actually going to go ahead and make one change. Let's do that. Anybody leave this all over their source code? Right, so we have our debug, and I'm going to go ahead and check that in. We're going to go ahead and check in the one change. So once that change comes into the system, we'll be able to see more than one change set, and I'll be able to show you one other cool features of the file explorer in the web. So that should be done in a few seconds here. All right, it's done. So now, which file did I modify? This was home controller. So if I go to our controllers folder, and I click on home controller, and I click on history, we now see there's two change sets that apply to this file. And I can click on the next change set, and I can actually get, I like this view a little bit better, side by side. You can get side-by-side file comparison right here in the cloud for your change sets and for your shell sets as well. So that's very powerful. You don't have to have Visual Studio. You might be at lunch. You might be away from home. You can go in here, view what's happening, see the history, compare files. And a new feature that we released literally on Monday to the service is you can add comments in change sets and shell sets. So if, let's say, I came in here and I saw that one of my developers left another debug statement that they should never have checked in. Let's say it's against our team policy, I can go in and I can add a comment and say, we should not have debugged that right line in our source code anymore. And to commit that, I just hit Control Enter. If you press Enter, it actually creates space for you to enter more comments. Another thing I could have done is selected multiple lines. So let's say I want to select this whole about thing and I want to say add a comment. I could say, We don't need this. Can anybody say what I'm doing right now? Like, what is this called often in Teams? When some other guy looks at your code? Code review, right? It's not a code review, but it's kind of cool, right? It's very easy to do. And the one sort of downside is it doesn't send notifications today. I wish it did. That would be my, like, hey, if I can get a feature, even though I work on the extended team, they don't listen to me. They do, but they're like, they're not going to go work on it right away. You know, Brian Harry isn't like, yeah, sure, Dimitri, let's throw that in. We'll stop all our work. But eventually, I think this will get even better. For now, you can send an email and say, hey, Dimitri, go look at your change set. I put some comments in there. It doesn't have to be very formal. This could also be documentation. Let's say you want to put something as a note in here. We made this line change in this change set for this reason. And a month from now, when you forget what the reason was, you can go look it up without having to have a Word document somewhere, you know, or looking through, you know, comments on the check-in, which might apply to more than one file. There's all sorts of reasons why this is very nice, because it's very specific to line or lines of code. It's very visual. And it's a discussion. So I'm going to go back in and take advantage of my friend Brian, who's just been sitting here. And as he was sitting here, activity has been happening. So as you do check-ins, I've enabled notifications into my team room. And people can see in the team room what's been happening. In fact, once they see it, they can click on it. Sorry. All right. Where did it go? Okay. So now that Brian has seen in the team room that some activity for check-ins has happened, he can click on the change set link. That's going to take him into the change set view. And now you can see that there's a comment been put in there. Now, I'm going to do this a little bit differently, because I actually want to show you guys the interaction that happens. So I'm going to start an in private session. Never mind. It's going to be too much for today. But that's fine. What you could have done, if this would have logged you in as a different user, which it did not, this logged me in as myself. I can see that in the top right. Brian could have come in here if he was logged in and said, you know, I don't agree. Sorry. I'm going to create these until I drive you crazy. That has happened too. So now you have a discussion as well. So think of these comments as an ability to leave comments, leave documentation, do a light code review, have a discussion. Now, I wouldn't necessarily have the longest discussion in here possible. And if somebody is putting in something that they shouldn't, you can come in and delete it. This isn't as durable as, let's say, the team room is. Also, team rooms don't get notified today of comments, nor do email notifications. Just FYI, this is really up to you guys to communicate, but it's very lightweight and very powerful. All right, so we've shown that. Another cool feature, I'm going to go back to Explorer, is let's say you need to send this this whole tree over to a vendor. Or I had this once in a company. I worked with payroll company. So all the source code had to go to the lawyers into a safe on a CD at some point. Every year, I think, we had to do this, drop it to a CD for legal reasons. In case we went out of business, they wanted to have the source code as a payroll entity. So you can right-click, and you can say download as a zip file. And this will download all your source code right now as a zip file that you can save. You can click at any point in your tree. You can click on something deeper. I could say I just want my tests to be sent into a file, etc. So you can download a zip. You can also add to favorites. So let's say this solution here is actually one of your team's most active projects right now. You can say add to team favorites. And once you do, it's going to appear on your homepage. So now our homepage is building out. We see bugs. We see that two recent changes came into the MVC application. We got some chat going on. Lots of cool activity. All right, for our next demo, let's talk about builds. One of the capabilities of Team Foundation Service is to do builds in the cloud for you. The disadvantage, sort of having us do it, is that we have a limited set of SDKs that are installed on that machine, and it's an image. So we spin up an image every time you guys want to do a build. That way nothing else can ever appear in that image. You know, we never have like a shared environment where something could leak into another person's build. That's a very bad scenario. Every time you do a build in the cloud with us, you build your source code, we spin up a brand new fresh machine, and then we destroy it afterwards. And that means anything we have with the machine we have that we don't, you need to include the DLLs as part of your solution so that the build succeeds. If something really weird needs to be on that machine in order for your build to succeed, you can set up your own virtual machine, and Team Foundation Service can point to that machine and do builds against your infrastructure, whether that's on Azure or Amazon. It doesn't care, right? As long as you have a build machine somewhere that the service can talk to. We won't do a demo of that today, but it's possible to set up. But we could do builds of this application. So I don't need my zip file here. I'm going to cancel out. And I'm going to go back to Visual Studio, and I'm going to define a build for our project. So the way to do that is to go to the Team Explorer. Let's go to Home, go to Builds. And we're not going to do anything fancy, but we're going to define a build definition that's just called, you know, build. I'm going to save it. And now we have a build. We could queue this build right now against Team Foundation Service. That's where it's going to live by default. Since we're connected to Team Foundation Service, that's where it's going to try to do the builds for you. But I actually want to show you the web interface that it can do that as well. This is where the value of the web just kind of keeps growing and growing for me, right? So we're going to click on build. And we're going to see that there's now a definition that we just created using Visual Studio in your project. The only thing you can't do in a web interface is create build definitions today. But you can build the definitions. So you can queue the builds. I'm going to right-click and say queue build. I want this build actually as high priority in my environment. If there's other builds going on, I want to override those a little bit. And now we have a build in the system. And now that we have builds that could potentially happen, I want my team to be aware of it. So I'm going to go to my team room. And I'm going to go to manage events. And I'm going to say, I want to see the following builds here. Save that. So now as build activity happens, my team room becomes even more powerful. More activity flows in there. Let's go back. Let's see what's happening with our build. Shouldn't take too long, but we have the ability to view builds that are queued, the ability to view builds that are completed or those that are deployed. Let's say you've integrated Windows Azure. We'll do that in a couple of minutes. So that's possible. And once this build completes, you'll see the status of the build, whether it's running or failed or succeeded, etc. And we can add that build as well to our team favorites. So I'm going to click on this little dropdown and say add to team favorites. And now our homepage will have builds. So now we've gotten almost to the point where we were when I showed you the more kind of built out project, right? This is very powerful, guys. You know, even if you don't use it with your organizations and the Team Foundation service, use it with Team Foundation server. This is for everybody. It's a really powerful way to work together as a team. And once the build's completed, we'll see how that affects the system. Move from there. Now, in the meantime, I want to show you one other thing. Let's talk about Windows Azure. This is all connected at this point. So I'm going to go to Windows Azure portal, and I'm going to log in with my live ID. And by all means, this isn't a full Windows Azure session, so I'm not going to explain everything I'm doing. But just to give you guys a little bit of a summary, I'm going to create a website in the cloud on Windows Azure. Websites, I believe, are still free. Don't hold me to that. But basically, it's a very cheap way, if nothing else, to create websites on the internet. You can use PHP, you can use ASP.NET, MVC, it doesn't matter. We support all sorts of stuff in there. But we also support this Team Foundation service to Azure integration. So we're going to create a new website. It's going to take only a few seconds if all goes well. Tech at actual session, that's going to be its URL. That's going to create in a few seconds, and then we're going to link this new website to our Team Foundation service. And we're going to create a continuous deployment. What is this useful for? Let's give you some examples. I'm a little terrified of this for production scenarios. Imagine you're working in source control, you have continuous integration going, you do a check-in, and the continuous integration by the name continuously integrates. It pushes your code out to the web. But this is very cool for dev environments. Imagine having a dev environment, let's say, or a QA environment that's constantly updated. And it's updated in the cloud, so the vendor that you use in Oklahoma, even though you live in Seattle, can instantly hit the site. There's no extra infrastructure to set up for them to test your site. And we're going to go ahead and do that link right now and show you how that works, how easy it is. This demo is so simple, it's almost sometimes not worth showing, but let's do it. There's a button here said set up deployment from source control. Then you choose what source control. We can even deploy from Dropbox, you know, CodePlex, GitHub, all sorts of interesting locations. We'll choose Team Foundation service. And we're gonna use the URL of my service. So I don't make a typo, I'm just gonna cut it from here. And I'm gonna hit authorize. Authorize is going to use the OAuth kind of mechanism. It's going to go out to Team Foundation service and say, hey, this Azure guy wants access to your source code. You agree? Yes. And now we literally have continuous deployment to Azure, to that website we created. I've used this when I was working with my colleague. We were building a demo for like a mini conference for our customers, and we wanted to show a website. At the end of the day, we both created a team, just two of us. We were working in the team with continuous deployment. We were both working nights sort of to get this done. We were doing check-ins. The site was always up to date. Our boss can go in and see what's happening there. I lived this. Like, it was awesome, right? And then this was a demo, so I never was concerned I'm going to bring down a production environment. By all means, you could if you wanted to, but that's not recommended. So here I'm going to choose where to get the source code, the actual session. And it's smart enough to pick the very first web project it sees. So for those kind of scenarios, it works by default very well. You can always go and customize it to be any project you want, so don't think you're locked into something. But now I've created this link between the two sides. Let's go see what's going on with our build. Let's refresh our page. Our build is still queued. That's 4 minutes. It's not that much time. I get ahead of myself. But I want to show you what happened when we linked to Azure. So we have this button here, which I'm not a big fan of because it looks like a definition. It's not. It means show me every build definition. But you have these actual two builds here below. The first one is recreated. This one was created by Azure for you. This is the one through Visual Studio that you can customize if it by default isn't set up correctly. So we can go ahead and take a look at it. And it has not been queued anywhere. It hasn't been completed anywhere because no check-in has triggered it. So we're going to go ahead and trigger a check-in. We're going to remove this silly debug line. And then we're going to check in our source. Let's do it from here. All right, there you go. We've done a check-in. Let's see if that triggered as it should. Continuous integration build. There you go. Continuous integration build has been kicked off by the check-in. Again, fully configurable. You don't have to, you can set up the link, but break continuous deployment. You could say build only when I queue this build. So you really have full control. Just by default, that's the scenario that they set up for you. And hopefully our other build will finish as well. See, if I click all build definitions, I can see that I have more than one build in our system. One is running, one is queued. And let's go back to the slides for a minute while this is running. So we've just seen a lot of stuff. We saw how to set up a team, start assigning work. We saw how to manage our sprints, manage our team members, set up that agile portfolio. Then we went on to source control, right? We saw how to use Visual Studio source control. We did check-ins. We used comments on our change sets, so it's kind of a light code review. We were able to download the source code, compare files in the web, lots of cool stuff there. Then we got into builds. With builds, we were able to create a build definition using Visual Studio. Favorite a build so it's on the homepage. We were able to build to the cloud, hopefully. That'll finish by the time I'm done talking. And we were able to use the team room to monitor activity. And we'll take a look at the team room as well, make sure that that activity has been posted there. And the last thing that I want to show you after the build finishes is the ability to set up test cases right from the web as well. Let's talk about this. What is test case management? Take a step back. Microsoft Test Manager is a product that you can get for your testers or you get as developers, depending on the SKU of Visual Studio that you have. And you can go ahead and create test cases, and you can say, well, I want a plan. I want a bunch of tests within that plan. I want to associate that plan either just manually with work that's happening or actually with stories, so that as the stories flow through the sprints, we can go ahead and look at what kind of tests exist for this story, what are we going to do. This is all great if you have Microsoft Test Manager. A lot of developers don't use Microsoft Test Manager. A lot of people haven't even opened it up too much. Now the web gives you the ability to, at the very least, explore what your test team is doing from the web UI, but also interact by creating test plan, test cases, steps. You can become part of the process without another product. Microsoft Test Manager still has some benefit, but I want to show you guys kind of how the web is evolving to be more powerful. So let's check on our builds. And actually, we can use our team room to see if anything's been happening here. Okay, the builds are still going. Let's let those finish. So here we have another button called test. And by default, nothing's in here, right? We just entered a brand new test plan area where nobody has set up any tests. So I'm going to go ahead and click this new button and say I want to create a test plan. Website test plan. And by all means, there's a lot to learn when it comes to properly setting up tests and methodologies around testing, et cetera. That's not the point of today, but I want to at least show you how the web interface gives you the ability to get there eventually. So now that we've created a plan, I'm going to add a static suite of tests. I typically don't like to do this. I like to use requirement-based so that it pulls out all the tests based on the requirements I've set up. I just don't have time to demo all of that today. But now that we've created this, we can hit New and create an actual test plan. Verify login. Our test plan will be open web page. This is going to be a very terrible test plan, by the way. Don't ever do it this way. Open web page, click on login. Use username Dimitri, password. Yes, it's that bad. And the expected results, you should be on logged in/home.aspx. And now I've assigned this to, let's give this to Julia, save it. And now we have this notion of, and I'll zoom in a little bit so everybody can see, we have a notion of a plan. The plan has one or more suites, and then each suite has one or more tests. and you can go ahead and modify those tests from the web, create them. The new capability that was released as of Monday, this did not exist in Team Foundation Service before, is the ability to create the plans and the suites from the web, the ability to manage them. You can change them, rename them, delete them. This is very cool because it really breaks that dependency. Before, when I talked after like Visual Studio 2012 Update 2 to people, I said, we have web-based test case management. Oh yeah, but to create the very first plan, you have to use MTM, Microsoft Test Manager. That's no longer true. So that's one of the enhancements. You can read all about it on tfs.visualstudio.com. But now that we've done that, we can actually execute a manual test run. So let's say this test is designed to be manual, because that's what it is. You can hit the run button from the web. The run opens up a window. You can then, let's say, open up another browser. Let's check on our build here. Let's do another window. The build is running for much longer than it should. As everything, every time you have a demo, you know, this worked, you know, guys don't know how many times, but I'm sure you believe me. So eventually that will complete. In fact, I'm going to, let's see, I think I can cancel. I'm going to stop this build here because I want my continuous deployment one to finish much more than the one I just used as a demo. And maybe that'll fix up our problem. All right, so that's going to keep going. So I don't have a website there to show you, but we can open up good old Microsoft.com. Let's see, that's what I was testing. We can put it side by side with our test. We can say, all right, I opened the web page, that worked, the web page didn't crash. I clicked login, make believe, you know, this is the login button. So that worked. Then I entered my username. Oops, this is the password to everybody, right? That never happens with a projector. And then that failed. And the reason why it failed is I got an error. And let's say you want to add an attachment. You click the little plus button here. If you take a screenshot, let's say, you can go ahead and browse out to a file, attach a file. You can also say, I want to create a bug from this. Now that I know the test has failed, I'm going to hit create bug. I know this is Dimitri's fault, so I'm going to assign it. Login failed, see details of the test. All right, so we're going to close that. And I'm actually going to attach an image or just something random that I quickly find here. There you go. That should be fine. So now save and close. And we're done. So you can see how from the web you can test almost anything. Here's one scenario that becomes kind of interesting. Let's say you want to test something that's not on the Microsoft platform. You want to test something on a Mac. You can open up the web and run this test as a tester, take notes, screenshots, create a bug. You don't have to be in a PC. Any modern browser will do it. And the ability right from the test to go into the bug state, I think, is very useful as well, because now without any sort of installed tool, you've not only tested, you've assigned work to get that bug corrected, or you've indicated that everything has been successful. Let's take a look back in here. We can see that this failed. There's a little red indicator. That's how we know that it has failed. And if we go to work, open bugs, we can see that there's one open bug. If we open that bug, I'm going to scroll down and show you guys that you can see embedded all the steps of the test and where it failed and what the comment was when it failed. So it's very verbose. This is as easy as I'm making it look. Like, this isn't like, oh my gosh, we're going to go back and try to use this thing, it'll be complicated. It could be complicated. You could do a lot more than I'm showing. I'm like, I'm doing nothing today. But that nothing could make a team a lot more efficient if your process is email and Excel or no process, even if you're like two guys. Even if you're just a couple of folks that want to try this within your bigger organization, think about it that way, right? The source code, you know, you can always download the source code if you don't like this system. There's no way to export a database today and say, I want to move back to my on-premises solution. But this is in the cloud. It's yours to keep regardless. Eventually, we'll add more features. Eventually, we do plan to allow you to import data, export data, so you can leave the cloud, come back to on-premises, and the other way as well. So it's very powerful, and the interface here, I think the web interface is very underrated. And we also should have an attachment. Let's see if I remember how to get to it. So here, links. Yeah, it's been a while since I had to do that, so let's make believe I found that. But yes, that image will be there. And I was very lame. I'll show you guys which image I used. Yeah, that's me up on stage, Channel 9 Live. I was so happy to see myself up there. I took a saved that picture down. All right. Let's see if our build succeeded. Otherwise, I'll be sad. Our build failed. No, that's the build that we stopped, I believe. All right. This thing is still running. Well, you can't win them all, as they say. In the normal world, the build has succeeded. The build succeeded at 4 o'clock in the morning last night. So I know it succeeded recently. I'll figure out why that's not working. But again, this is for you guys to try. It's all up free in the cloud. I will give the team one credit. There's a little star next to certain features. That means it's in preview. Because test is something new, and build in the cloud is new as well. The star means it's in preview. That means it's a beta. That means the only thing failed today was the beta feature. Everything else worked. Yay, nothing in production failed, right? And the guy who owns that will get a call from me. So we'll figure it out. And I hope you guys enjoyed the service. I hope you give it a shot. If you have any questions, please ask them. I'm here to help. Thank you so much. Question? If you have a lot of questions, let's finish this and we'll talk.
Okay. Yep. I got confused on the homepage where it shows the recent, your recent list. So I saw the red X there and I thought I was deleting a project. Only now did I realize.
Oh, okay. The question is, when you're on the homepage for the collection, not just the project, there's a little X next to team projects. Does that mean it deletes the team project or just removes it off the list? It just removes it off the list, and yes, it's a very scary X. And when you click it, you're like, oh my God, I lost all my data. No, it's still there. You click on browse.
It was actually the opposite. I wanted to lose it, it's still there.
You wanted to lose it, and it's still there. That's terrible. Yeah, so, browse all, that's the dialog we just brought up. So browse all allows you to get to any team project that exists in your collection. And we'll talk more offline about anything you want. Any other questions? If the question is, if we have build custom activities in your build, can we use it? I'm not sure 100%. I'm sorry. I'll find out for you if you want. It's documented very well what is or isn't capable. The way that I always tell folks when I don't know the answer to something is right up there on the screen. So if you go here to the Learn button, there's a section on build, and they describe the capabilities. If it's still not clear, my contact info, I really do answer emails and Twit, so let me know.
Question?
Yes. If you have to have your own VM to do the builds, it's nothing that I've ever set up myself. But it's documented very well. Like when I read the documentation a while back, I was like, oh, that makes sense. You set all this stuff up and it just should work. And by all means, it's just more work because you're expected to make sure that build agent is configured properly. But it will hook up to it. It will run builds. I know customers that do this today. So it's not a barrier, just a learning curve. More than five people? Right, so the question is, what is the price for more than five people? So I'm going to use the web page again. If you click on price, this is everything that I could tell you, unfortunately. Yeah, so if you don't find your answer there, the one thing that a lot of our customers sort of take advantage of today is the kind of the agreement we have that says you will get this for your MSDN benefits to some degree at no additional charge. If you have MSDN as a team, I would feel pretty comfortable getting started here. We will post pricing at some point. I hope that soon. It's just not under my control. Right. So the question is, what happens when you have partners and other folks that don't have MSDN? How do you deal with pricing since that's not available? I'd love to hear from you. If you want to send me an email about how you guys want to use this thing. Ideally, I'd love to run through my licensing people, get you maybe some answers before, you know, we can finalize it for the world. But please let me know what your details are. I'd love to hear it. So the question is actually a very good one, and the question says, you have a bunch of teams, they're all working towards a common goal, you're like an enterprise scenario or a large company, and you have all these teams of streams of work, of agile work, how do you coordinate all up? The feature that I'm gonna bring up on the screen right now, I'm gonna go to work, and I'm gonna click on features. This is how we're taking baby steps to enable that from the web in a very easy way. The notion that you can create features, and then you can assign features across teams. The big advantage of this concept of features is that those can be on different teams. If you look at the iteration paths here, they're all the same team, but they don't have to be. If I had three teams, they could be assigning their stories up to my vision, which are features. And now you can have a sense of how are the features progressing? Are they being finished or not? Is this higher level feature concept, is it getting close to being done or not? This isn't going to make everybody 100% happy, but I think that you'll see us use this as a stepping stone in the right direction. But that's how we do it. Don't believe so. But you can change the links manually. So you can create, you can edit the backlog item and change the team and change the associated feature. You can do a lot. Just a little bit more manual work. Yeah, I've done that. Sure, no problem. Questions? Okay. So the question is, let's say you're a team that works using many different IDEs. You have Visual Studio, you have Eclipse, you have Xcode. You want to work with Team Foundation. Probably you want to use Git as your source control repository at that point. Go to the Git session. They can certainly talk. Like Martin Woodward is our cross-compatibility guy. He can answer any questions you have. But I would say that the tool is less relevant because you have one collection, and there you have projects. The tools connect to it to do source control. Everything else you can do from the web. You don't have to rely on any particular tool. So think of like your work is the web across all the tools, and then your tools are your source code, and you can mix and match that pretty well. You don't choose that. The only choice that you make in the beginning is if I go back home and I click new project, these are the two types. So you choose the type of source control you have, but then the tools connected to it, that's just documentation, how to use those tools. So if you go to TFS, thevisualstudio.com, click learn, you can learn how to connect with those tools, but it's not a choice. Thank you. Let me take one from over there. Question.
Can you import from or export to on-premise?
Question is, can you import or export data from your collection? Not at this point. We're working on it.
Okay.
Question?
When you create users, are you able to assign them different roles within the project, or do you just have access to everything?
You can manage security in a project-per-project basis. You can also make certain people collection admins. There's a whole, because this is just an overview session, but there's a whole management interface back here.
Okay.
So you have a lot of control. Question, can we do ADFS anytime soon? I have nothing to announce, but of course that is our goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can always ask, right here.
Okay.
All right, guys, I'm gonna get off stage in the interest of time. Thank you very much, but I'll answer questions as soon as I'm off.